Hello, my name is Deborah Olson, and I was a Porto volunteer in the summer and fall of August 1990. And the program I'm about to show you is called Daily Life in Mining Days. And I gathered the information from newspaper articles and also from recorded interviews with people who lived at Holden during mining days. Well, who ate 23 tons of ice cream a year, 8 tons of butter, 72 tons of meat, 24,000 dozen eggs, and still sometimes complained that all they were served for breakfast were dry cereal, juice, hot cake, toast, fresh rolls, hot cereal, bacon, sausage, ham, eggs, coffee, and tea? Well, these were some of the single miners who worked for the House Sound Mining Company and ate in the dining room where we now eat. New town carved out of wilderness. The headline boomed in the Tacoma, Washington newspaper on October 31, 1938. The town was Holden, home to about 400 miners and their families. For 19 years, until 1957, the men shoveled, blasted, and picked 10 million tons of ore containing copper, zinc, silver, and gold from the mountain. Holden was considered one of the most modern and efficient mining operations in the Northwest, and mine officials came from as far away as Sweden and South Africa to view the operation. And the mine was the centerpiece of the Washington Pavilion at the 1939 New York World's Fair. The Wenatchee World, on December 12, 1938, said House Sound miners live and amuse themselves in quarters that old-time hard rock miners thought of only in misty dreams. Gone are the good old days when friendly arguments were settled with pick handles, and hard rock men ripped and roared through western mine boom towns. Pastel bunkhouses blending with the landscape, soft drink parlors, and movie theaters have replaced poker rooms, bars, and dance palaces. The Tacoma newspaper noted, "The mess house has as modern equipment as any city hotel. The men are fed the best of food, vegetables and meats being kept fresh in modern refrigerating plants. The cooking is number one, no better baked beans having been sampled by the writer." The miners and their families lived in three main areas. The single men lived in dormitories we now call lodges. And the six dormitories housed 56 men each, two to a room. The mine officials and foremen lived in 14 chalets, and the working class families lived in a residential area called Winston Camp, about a half mile west of the main town site. Eventually, about 100 homes were built in the area on lots the families leased from the U.S. Forest Service for about $20 a year. And these are photographs of some of the people that lived in Holden during mining days. It will take this little guy a few years to fill his father's boots. In 1943, wages averaged $7.75 a day for workers who worked above ground and $8.50 a day for those who worked below ground. And that year, single men paid $1.80 a day for their room and board. By 1951, the payroll was $1.6 million. The average wage was $15 a day or $4,800 a year. And this wage was among the highest in Washington State, according to one newspaper account. During the war, there was a shortage of workers in the mine, and men in the Army Reserve, and paroled convicts, and also German prisoners of war were brought in to work the mine. Also, men who worked at Holden Mine were exempt from active duty because the mine was considered a vital operation to the war effort. And also for that same reason, people who lived at Holden got extra meat ration coupons. The town had a hospital that had two private rooms and also one four-bed ward. There was a resident doctor and a dentist visited periodically. And the doctor's primary responsibility was to the miners. But also the doctor, I understand, gave prenatal and postnatal care. But most of the women went out of Holden to have their babies. But in the later years, I understand a doctor and his wife, who were a nurse, taught natural childbirth classes, which was a fairly new concept at the time, and they delivered babies at Holden. And one of the babies that was born at Holden was named Mary Holden Webb. And there was an interesting item in the Chelan Mirror in 1947. It said, Dr. Gallup slipped and fell on the ice in front of the fountain lunch. And I understand that his leg was so severely broken that he had to be rushed to the Wenatchee Hospital by a Forest Service boat. And I often wondered who came in to take care of the people while he was recuperating. In the early days of Holden, there was no grocery store in town, and people had to write out a grocery list, a grocery order once a week and send it to a store in Chelan. And the store would fill the order and send the groceries back up on a boat. But in 1947, a grocery and variety store was opened in the lower level of what is now Lodge 6. It was called Price's Grocery Store and later Peter Rabbit Grocery. And the store advertised in the Holden Miner. And in 1948, you could get a pound of coffee for 49 cents. Cauliflower was 20 cents a head. You could buy two boxes of Kellogg's Corn Flakes for 35 cents. Hamburger was 48 a pound. Bacon, 68. You could buy a pound of sirloin steak for 59 cents. And a head of lettuce for a dime. Apples were 7 cents a pound. The store also sold fresh seafood, and you could get a pound of fresh salmon for 65 cents, a pound of fresh shrimp for $1.50. Oysters were 69 a pint. You could get a carton of cigarettes for $1.59. And in that year, a filter Queen upright vacuum cleaner with all the attachments cost $99.50. There were also other stores in town. There was a post office, a hardware store, a barber shop, and also a dress shop in what is now the guest laundry. Well, the Holden Miner newsletter, which came out weekly, was a wealth of information on what people were doing, what bowling teams were winning, who was having a baby or taking a shopping trip to Wenatchee. It also listed the 1948 presidential election results, and Truman was the choice for Holdenites. He received 91 votes to Dewey's 67 votes, and Wallace of the Progressive Party garnered only 5. Holden also had a school for students in grades 1 through 8. The high school students had to go out to high school. They perhaps went to Chelan or Wenatchee and boarded with relatives, or some of them went to private boarding schools. The school started with two rooms, and a third was later added in the basement when the student population increased. The school had 53 students in 1947 and more than 100 when it closed a decade later. Linda Jensen, who lived at Holden from 1951 to 55, attended 4th through 7th grade. And she said the 8th graders got to sit by the windows. She said we definitely had our pecking order. She also recalled that both 6th grade boys and girls took woodshop classes. Evidently their teacher, Mrs. Field, had taken a woodworking class at a college. The students also put on plays and operettas for the community, and these were major social events. And Linda Jensen, who was Maid Marian in the operetta Robin Hood, has donated her dress to the museum, and she also has donated her Campfire Girls dress. There was a regular school notes column in the Holden Miner, and in one edition of 1948, talked about Parents' Night, when the parents came to watch their children put on skits and relay races and other athletic events. And one event featured the blue team against the red team in a boys' basketball game, with the boys and the blue team playing in dresses. And one student named Buddy Nickel wrote this account for the newsletter. He said, "Myself and four other girls, I mean boys, played against the red in dresses on Parents' Night. The dresses hogtied us, tripped us up, and lost the game for us." The newsletter also noted that the Parents' Night included an adult spelling bee, but it said the number of entrants was limited to those who had the nerve or could be talked into trying. Mrs. Dolfay had a formidable list of words that would frighten the most daring, but the winners got a subscription to the magazine of their choice up to a value of $7. Well, the children of Holden, like children most everywhere, like to jump rope and play marbles and baseball and basketball and dare base and dodgeball. And one spring, Linda Jensen noted that they began their baseball season on 4 feet of crusted snow. The town also had several organizations for young people. There were Bluebirds and Campfire Girls, also Cub and Boy Scouts. And Linda Jensen said that they often went on fairly long treks. She said her brother, when he was about 14 years old, took a 10-day trip to Cloudy Pass, Image Lake, and Stehekin. And in the summer, the students who came home from high school had jobs. They would sweep dorm rooms or clear rock from the road down to Lucerne. And the younger kids would babysit and run errands and had paper routes. Well, women were not allowed to work in the mine, but several worked in the dining hall, the fountain lunch, which we now call the snack bar, and in mine offices. And the hospital reportedly also had two nurses on duty at all times. Well, the women organized several social clubs and charity groups. The social clubs would do everything from play cards to celebrate birthdays. And there was a Chelan Hospital Guild that sponsored candy, cookie sales, and benefit dances to raise money for the hospital. And the women also organized the Orthopedic Guild, which raised money for the Children's Orthopedic Hospital in Seattle. Well, Christmas was a big community event. The party included community carol sing and a school program. And every child through 8th grade got a present distributed by Santa Claus. And Linda Jensen said the first few years she was here, the presents were fairly expensive and elaborate. But that changed in the later years when slot machines were outlawed by Washington State. The community club used the proceeds from the machines to buy the presents, and when those funds dried up, they couldn't buy quite as expensive of gifts. On New Year's Eve, there was a big dance in the gymnasium. A band was hired to come in from the outside, and people dressed up in their formal wear and party hats. And Linda Jensen recalls that one New Year's Eve, the single men in the dormitories got a bit tipsy and decided to initiate the new year by taking a dip in Railroad Creek in their long johns, even though the temperature was 9 degrees below zero. And speaking of liquor, there was no tavern in town. The company outlawed a tavern because they felt it would cut down on absenteeism and other problems. But people could take the bus or drive down to a tavern at Lucerne. And also in later years, a packaged liquor store opened in what is now the Koinonia Fireside Room. And also people made home brew. People on the interviews that I listened to tell of corks and tops popping off bottles and bottles exploding on the home brew that was stored in basements and under beds. The company also did not allow churches to be established at Holden. They felt it, in a small community, it could be divisive if there were competing congregations. But there were regular church services conducted by visiting priests and ministers, usually about once a month, and there was a non-denominational Sunday school and also Bible school. Well, initially, mine operators and managers were responsible for maintaining law and order at Holden. If people got drunk or disorderly, they were fired. And they were fired also if they broke game laws. But unfortunately, John Bly, a mine foreman, said it was his best men that often got into trouble. So he decided to start keeping a file on the men, and when they began getting a little restless, he would call them into his office and ask them to take a few days off and take a little break from the village. And sometimes he said he would get a call from Chelan saying that they were broke and that they needed an advance to get back to town. Well, the village was not without crime. In 1947, $500 was stolen from the jukebox and pinball machine and the cash box in a break-in at the rec hall. And two men were arrested, and the money that was pilfered was found under the mattress of one of the men. And in 1948, the Chelan County Commissioners were asked to supply Holden with more formal law enforcement. So a justice of the peace and constable were assigned to the village. Well, the 4th of July and Labor Day were also big days at Holden. There was usually a big picnic, and the children had relay races and cracker and pie eating contests. The women would have nail driving, log sawing, and bucket throwing contests, and the men had baseball throws. The company, I understand, provided the hot dogs and the pop. And the day culminated in a big baseball game followed by a dance. Also, people would hike to Heart Lake, perhaps to fish on family outings, or go down to Lucerne on Lake Chelan and picnic and swim. And one woman recalls that her husband courted her by taking her on fishing trips to Heart Lake or bicycle rides down to Lucerne. But she said, unfortunately, her younger brothers and sisters always tagged along. Well, the town had a recreation hall that we now call the Village Center, and it had a library, a gymnasium, a four-lane bowling alley, a lunch counter called the Fountain Lunch, a card room, and a pool hall with slot and pinball machines. And here is the main floor of the rec hall that was used for basketball and volleyball and badminton games. Linda Jensen said that for movies, a canvas was spread on the floor to protect it. Friday was usually kids' night with plenty of cowboy shows. Wednesday was movie nights for adults, and Sunday was family nights with plenty of musicals. In 1940, a movie cost 35 cents, and some of the shows that were showing in 1948 included That Hagen Girl with Ronald Reagan and Shirley Temple. Betty Davis was starring in Jezebel. Ginger Rogers and Cornell Wilde were in It Had to Be You. Bambi was another release that year that showed at Holden. Rita Hayworth and Orson Welles were starring in Lady from Shanghai. And John Wayne and Lorraine Day were in Tycoon. Also in the 1940s, a young actress named Elizabeth Taylor performed on the stage of the Recreation Hall, and she was in the area filming a Lassie movie. Well, as I mentioned, the rec hall has a four-lane bowling alley, which is still used today. It needs manual pool pin setters. The women's teams were called the Zinc Streaks, the Gold Diggers, the Copper Queens, the Silver Stars, the Brass Hats, and the Dynamites. And here's the pool hall. And I understand that a pretty constant game of poker was going on in the back of the pool hall, and reportedly thousands of dollars were won and lost at this table. Well, the Fountain Lunch served not only ice cream, as we do today, but sandwiches and other items. It had a pretty full menu, hamburgers, and also full steak dinners. Well, you perhaps notice something on this picture that is absent from Holden today. TV antennas sprouting from the chalets. Well, television came to Holden in the 1950s, but the signal from the three Spokane channels was pretty weak by the time it got here. So a geologist named Bob Pash, who lived in a chalet, devised a cable system for the town. And what he did is he amplified a signal from an antenna that he had on a fir tree outside his house, and he fed the cable system to other chalets and dormitories. And also because of his expertise, he became the village's TV repairman. Well, people did a lot of hiking in the area. Hunting also was a big sport with Holdenites. And in 1952, one Holdenite reportedly shot a young bear from the second floor of Lodge 6. Also, people did a lot of fishing, mainly at Donkey Heart and Holden Lakes, and also they did some fishing in Railroad Creek. And the Holden Miner newsletter kept track of how things were going. And on April 19, 1948, it reported, Holden anglers, led by the intrepid E.D. Haddon, mushed through a foot of snow today to try their luck on Donkey Lake opening day. Haddon reportedly snared an 18-incher, but this falls considerably short of his last season's record when he attempted to bring in a two-seater airplane during its takeoff. Well, Holden sounds like a pretty ideal community, but it did have some drawbacks and some problems. The isolation made shopping difficult, so most people did their shopping for back to school or for Christmas through card catalogs. And also, women who sewed had some problems getting the patterns that they wanted. So one seamstress wrote to various pattern companies, and the Butterick Company of New York agreed to send out a new pattern book every 4 months, and the book was kept in the library. There was a polio scare in the 1950s. One young girl died and another boy was crippled. Also, children and adults drowned in Railroad Creek and also on fishing expeditions or hikes. And one miner died in an avalanche. Evidently, he didn't stop to shower or change his clothes after his shift and was caught in a slide. And it was predicted that if the slide had been a 15 to 20 minutes later, more men would have died. Also, there could be some humorous moments because of the isolation. One woman who grew up at Holden said her mother and younger brothers and sisters had not been out of town for 4 years when they took a bus trip to the coast, and her brothers and sisters kept marveling and oohing and aahing at the pigs and the cows they saw in the farmyards as the bus traveled along. And her mother, she said, had to explain that her children regularly saw deer and bear and mountain goats, but they weren't used to farm animals. Well, snow was a way of life for Holdenites from October often into May. The average snowfall is between 250 and 300 inches. And in the winter of 1955 and 56, more than 500 inches fell. And in that year, in December of that year, 171.5 inches covered the town. And in 1957, Life magazine came and did a photo essay on life in the Cascades. But people also had fun with the snow. There were annual snow depth guessing contests. And in 1948, the spring of 1948, the newsletter said, a good deal of interest in the contest has been evidenced during the winter months on methods of estimating. Graphs, averages, and cycles were consulted, including an astrologer in Seattle. But the two winners, who divided $21.75, refused to reveal their method. Also, keeping snow off the roof was a family chore. And people could not just build a house where they saw an attractive lot. It was, the village was laid out by design because it was very important not to build homes where there was a slide area. There is a slide area between Winston Camp and the village, and mothers and teachers were regularly on slide patrol in the winter and the spring to make sure their children got safely to and from school. And also, there was a slide near the footbridge in 1951 that took out the firehouse. Well, plows and bulldozers sometimes had to work 24 hours a day to keep the road open to Lake Chelan because it was important to keep the trucks running to get the ore concentrate out. But people had plenty of fun in the snow. It was a children's paradise, and children and sometimes adults lived on sleds and skis in the winter. And also parents didn't have to worry about their children while they were sledding getting hit by a car. While the cars were allowed at Holden in the summer, they were not allowed to, very few were allowed to stay in the winter time. For one reason, with all the snow, there was really no place to park them. Few people had garages, and also the weight of the snow would crush them. So people would take them down to store them at Lucerne or take them out to Chelan and store them for the winter months. There was also a tow rope behind Winston Camp, so people didn't have to travel to Vail, Colorado to have fun skiing. Well, winter eventually ended. In 1948, on March 15th, the Holden Miner Newsletter reported that Mr. Fred Williams, local ornithologist, made a sworn statement early Sunday evening that he had seen a robin. He assumed the robin had been caught in a strong crosswind and dropped in here to get directions to California. Well, Holden as a mining town did not last. In 1957, the price of copper fell. The ore that was easily reached had been depleted, and equipment was wearing out, and labor and transportation costs were rising. So in February of that year, the company announced that it would close the mine by July 1st. Well, the company and a salvage firm removed much of the equipment from the mine and from the mill. Also, some people dismantled their homes and trucked the lumber down to the lake and then took it out by boat and rebuilt their homes elsewhere. But this was really expensive, so most people simply boarded up their homes and left, and a few of them sold their homes for a dollar each to be salvaged for chicken house material. And in 1962, the Forest Service destroyed homes because they were seen as a fire and safety hazard. Well, the closing of the mine prompted a grade schooler named Patty Davidson to write, "Holden to me is not just land where a lot of buildings stand. To me, Holden is nothing less than all created loveliness. To me, Holden is not a place outdone by a modern race. I like to think I see less of evil and selfishness. Holden's not lonely for all day. You see children at play. So when the day to leave is near, I'll try not to shed a tear." Well, the mine closed on June 28, 1957. And that winter, the Wenatchee paper sent reporters and photographers to see what had happened to Holden during its first winter. And the reporters found that the 14 company residences and 6 two-story bunkhouses appear practically the same as they did during the mine's heyday. The school is silent and empty, as though it is only waiting for the holiday to end. You could almost believe that it's just another winter, except there's not a living soul in the place that for 20 years has been the state's foremost mining venture. Holden is deserted except for a lonely hoot owl, whose hoo-hoo-hoo goes unanswered. Mrs. George Folk was the last to leave the town last fall. She had gone in through 18 inches of snow to try to rescue the last of the 17 cats she kept when she lived there. She had taken out all but 3. To keep the three alive over the winter, she left 96 cans of cat food opened in her house for her pets, plus 45 pounds of tallow, 15 pounds of dog food, and some catnip. The cats have turned wild. We have seen their tracks in the snow, but caught only a fleeting glimpse of the one. The three pets have answered the call of the wild, and they'll grow bigger than their domesticated mates as they hunt birds and rabbits and squirrels. Nature is having her way with the habitless homes of Holden. Although many of the private homes appear little damaged by the winter, a few buildings are down, a porch or two has been smashed, most television antennas are twisted and fallen. Residents moved out so hurriedly after the mine closed last summer that many signs of habitation remain. A wheelbarrow is propped against a tree trunk. There are clotheslines with the pins still fastened. A weather vane still whirs as the wind howls down from Bonanza Peak. The names are still on the houses. In the collapsed kitchen of the Joe Russian home, there is a mute reminder of other happy school days. Two lunch buckets with the name Joe and Mike Russian still sit inside the door of the attractive log cabin. Power lines gleam white and sparkling against a blue winter sky, but there is no juice flowing. An occasional hinge squeaks eerily as the wind blows down from cloudy paths and shakes the shutters. But except for the cats and the lonely hoot owl, there's not a soul stirring. In just one winter, Holden has become a ghost town. But as you know, Holden did not remain a ghost town for long. In 1960, the village was given to the Lutheran Church. And in 1962, the Seattle newspaper, in an article, noted, "In this setting, once resounded the robust laughter, noise, and vigorous activities of a mining camp. Here walked and lived hardy, courageous men who went deep into the bowels of the earth to dig and blast out the precious ores. Their tools were picks, shovels, drills, machines, and dynamite. Here, too, many of them lived with families. Then, for a period, it was a place of silence, buildings and equipment shrouded in the ghostliness of sudden abandon. But Holden Village lives again, its streets and buildings echoing once more with laughter and the hum of activities and singing. Here are men, women, and children whose instruments are Bibles, hymn books, altars, sacred vessels, and vestments. It is yielding a treasure beyond price, the fruit of the Holy Spirit. It is a place set apart from the natural world, but attuned to the beauty of nature and the glory and triumph of life in Christ."